Hello, Sandon and Jeff and everyone from In the Loop. My name is Cecilia and I live in Minneapolis. And I just wanted to say how incredibly sad I am that this show is ending. And I wanted to tell you that this show was actually my welcome to the city of Minneapolis. I moved here from New York City to go to medical school almost 3 years ago now. It's ridiculous. And on the night that I moved in, I had never been in this town before. I didn't know anyone here. The first appliance I plugged in my apartment was the radio. And I turned on the radio, and what happened to be on was one of your story slams. And I just remember feeling so happy to have found something so wonderful to listen to while I unpacked. And I really felt like I was hearing a piece of this new city that I had come to, and I will always think of your show as the thing that welcomed me to this city. It's sort of etched on my memory of Minneapolis forever. So I'm really sad that it's coming to an end, and I just wanted to say thank you for everything you guys have done. Thanks. Bye.
Listening to In the Loop from Minnesota Public Radio.
The official town crier of Minneapolis there from a few shows back. Guy's name is John Knights. I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is In the Loop. You know, healthcare reform and the Iranian nuclear thing with the... not today, right, Sandon?
Not today.
No, this is our last show, right? More than 5 years of my life working on this thing in some form, almost that much for Sandon. A lot of you guys have been listening for years, and we've worked really hard to build a community around the show. So, you know, we're not going to ignore it. You know, just do a few interviews, a song, a wacky Sandon segment, an Obama impression, and
and then
home,
we're done.
Right?
No, no, no.
No, but also don't want it to be a big hour-long pity party, because who the wants to listen to that?
Not me.
Not me either. We've had our pity party here, and we're going to do a show. But we did get a lot of great calls and comments, memories, poems, suggestions for this last episode. It's been really great to see all the stuff rolling in.
Yeah, right? I mean, the thing is, we're going to miss you guys a lot, too. So think of this as our saying goodbye to you, our celebration of how awesome it is to have friends and fans that are as cool as you all.
Yeah, we do want to feature a number of those things as we go here. And in fact, let's take the most pitiful of them all, maybe, and just get it out of the way here. This is a haiku that someone wrote for us. It rolled in very early in the process when we announced that we were going away. And I could not go back. I think it was on Facebook somewhere. I could not find who wrote this. So, like many haiku, maybe like haiku should be, it is anonymous. And I've asked Santa to come in and deliver it for us here.
In the loop now ends. It's silencing a shame. My tears fall on snow.
And in fact, not that anybody's counting, I think that middle line is only six syllables. So maybe it's better it remains anonymous.
Hey, I like it anyway.
A worthy effort and...
for sure.
Yeah, and tongue-in-cheek or not, maybe a little of both, as we often are here. Anyway, thank you for that. And we got more stuff like that coming up. So here's the roadmap for the show today. Kind of divides up into two parts, as it turns out. And the second part, which we'll get to later... includes a bunch of new stuff. We've got an interview with the most far-flung place we could think of. We'll introduce you to the ubiquitous, mysterious listener, Mark in Paris. There's a new song at the very end. And Santa's going to come back with, what, like some lessons learned or something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, well, you know, I started as a wee baby intern when you first were brave enough to bring me on your show. Now I am a producer. I've been in radio for 5 years. So I've learned a couple things along the way, and I'm going to share some of the pearls of wisdom that In the Loop has taught me over the years.
Cool. So look forward to seeing it later in the show. But the first part is going to be sort of a guided tour, I guess, through our long and storied history. And I would have had, and Sandon as well, I think, an impossible time choosing what to feature if we were to set out to do that. So what we're going to do is we're going to let some of the many suggestions that people called or wrote in over the past 2 weeks be the roadmap for this. And we're going to start with one of our great friends, lives in Fergus Falls, Minnesota. I've interviewed her on the show because she just seemed interesting, and at some point I thought I'd better talk to her. This is Jessica Sundheim. This is part of the message she left on our voicemail a few days ago.
Most of all, I wanted to tell you I loved the show, and just seeing the show develop and all of its crazy ways, and I just felt like you guys have constantly had to evolve and change, and have always been blown away by how you've always just taken it in stride, and thank you for all that you've contributed into my life and all of the perspectives that you've shared with us over the years. One of the first interviews you ever did was with a dominatrix, and at the time, I think I was in my mid-20s, and I didn't even know what that was, but it was a very interesting interview.
Ah, yes, the dominatrix. Good times. That was on our very first show that we ever put on the air, summer of 2005, and I'm not entirely sure I remember the origin of that idea. I was still a business reporter at the time, so I guess I was thinking of people and their jobs or something like that, and someone mentioned to me a dominatrix who, in addition to having her private practice, had a public show at a club in Minneapolis called Ground Zero. And so I went out one Saturday night to talk to Mistress Jean in this extremely loud goth club.
How do you categorize what you do? Do you consider yourself an artist? Are you in the service industry? What? How do you think of it?
I call myself an artist because I teach about this, I learn about this, I perform on stages about stuff like this. I do this here when I'm here in town. I make fetish movies that are about this. So it's, I don't have a one title, so I kind of, artist kind of consumes that.
So like a lot of artists, do you think your personal life and your professional life are very closely intertwined, or do you leave it behind when you leave the office?
No, it's pretty much, it's kind of consumed me, this lifestyle, so.
What do you do to prepare for a day at work? Is it just getting dressed, or is there something mental to it as well? Yeah, and psychological.
Costume for me is kind of part of it. Gets me in that mindset. So, you know, you think of, like tonight we're blonde and pink, so I'm usually not blonde and pink, so we kind of felt a little more, I don't know, fun and giggly today.
Some people would be surprised that a dominatrix has a fun and giggly day.
I get teased a lot because they call me the smiling dominatrix, so I'm not mean and stern all the time.
Well, it's not like reporting from a war zone or anything, but, you know, we journalists get our excitement where we can here in the Twin Cities. And she's at mistressjean.net, you freaks. Anyway, we're producing this kind of offbeat studio show here in our spare time. A couple producers and I, Nikki Tundell and Julie Seipel, were their names, and they're still here at Minnesota Public Radio. Sandin came on the scene shortly after that show, I think, interning for us, more or less. And somewhere in there, Minnesota Public Radio built a big new addition to their building, including a great space called the UBS Forum. And this is where things started to get really interesting. We thought, why not try the show up there? And thus began our long and very productive flirtation with doing In the Loop before a live audience. And I could rattle through the whole sweep of events here and all the different shows, but instead, I'm going to play some portions of a really great poem that was left on our voicemail last week by Aaron Lacey, who's a lawyer in Washington, D.C. He just moved to St. Louis, actually, I think, though, maybe even this weekend. Now, Aaron happens to be a good friend of mine from college, but he swears he listens because it's actually good. And if this poem is any indication, man, did he listen.
Oh, the loop that was from month to month and week to week, online, on air, on Cedar Street, and down a beat at Dorothy Day, where broken people with weary eyes and shoulders stooped were for one moment in the looped, and something important and special and rare occurred. Oh, the loop that was, that dared to follow our digital trail, to ask what fate befell Captain Planet, to question our democracy, our hypocrisy, our charity, our education, our dedication to our principles, to our budgets, to our vow and avocation.
That is a very truncated version of a pretty remarkable, oh, about a 3-minute poem that just does a great job of summing up not only what we did, but what we hoped to be. Very perceptive, and I'm very glad for it. If you want to hear the whole thing, I've put it up on our Facebook page, as I have with a number of the extended versions of some of these clips that I'll play today. Now, one of the things that caught my ear, especially about Aaron's poem, though, was that he led with what certainly is one of our finest moments on the show, I think, and one of the things that I'm proudest of when we picked up the whole shebang and relocated up the street to a homeless shelter. And we did the show in much the same format that we would normally do it, with interviews and music and commentary and audience conversation, except we were in the dining room of a homeless shelter. And most of our guests and most of our audience were homeless. One of the best things from that show was a guy whose name is Angelo Mack, and he's a poet. And we asked him to read one of his poems, and this is some of that poem. It's called Dead on My Feet.
I lie in a place with very little space, snoring in the background, coughing, sneezing, crunching bags, bickering fights, make it hard to sleep throughout the night. Now it's way past 10 before my sleep set in, and it's 5 a.m. I have to do it all again. Dogs get better night's sleep, and it's a dog life when you're walking on these streets. I rise at best with very little rest. Head for the chapel, there it said, you can find peace and rest, always the welcome guest. So I roll under the pew to catch a few, just to close my eyes and hear, hey you, service is through. Unlike before, when my judgment wasn't as poor, now decisions are cloudy, I find myself talking loud in a vain attempt to hold my head proudly. Dead on my feet. It's too easy to fuss. It's too easy to cuss. Always ready to fight. Longer are the days and shorter is the nights. So we show no remorse, no real concern, and yet we learn for a good night's rest. So tomorrow we could be at our best.
That's a shortened version of Angelo's poem for our show here today, but man, I hadn't heard that in a couple of years, and that is so good. Before and after that show at the shelter, we were building In the Loop with our audience here at the UBS Forum and Minnesota Public Radio, and we did shows on all kinds of things. We did them monthly for a while, and then at a certain point, we did them weekly for a period of a couple of months. We did stuff on the environment and education, crime, immigration. That was our very first live show. There's a hell of a topic to take on first time out of the gate. Economic stuff, and of course, we did politics. And we always try to create spaces to let things be a little more entertaining, maybe, than your typical public radio news program. Well, we got a call preparing for the show from John Holmgren, who lives in Minneapolis, who used to be a regular in our audience. And he said his favorite moment was when we were talking about political ads, and we invited in two actors who made a decent living off of doing them to talk about the craft, you know, such as it is. Their names, those actors, are Susan Fuller and Gary Grooms. Here's a little chunk of them and me from that show. Gary, you're also asked to do folksy a lot.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. What is, especially...
I sure am. Yes, sir, Jeff.
Especially for Midwestern
By ads. Cracky, I'm asked to do folksy people. So it's, you know, you sort of make it a friendly voice and, you know, talk about the dairy subsidies in this country have to be increased because otherwise our kids won't get their milk.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Terrible. And Susan, I know you're particularly fond of a type of ad. I don't know if we called it, the kind of kitchen table ad, or how would you...
That's actually what they're called.
What is the basic premise of the kitchen table ad?
It's a couple sitting around. They're discussing the issues over a cup of coffee. And a lot of people use that on television and the radio, especially as it gets closer to the end of the election. And they're always married.
I don't know if you two have ever done a kitchen table ad together before. I thought we'd give it a shot tonight. Jimmy, keyboard player for the Smarts. We get a little sort of kitchen table music, a little light piano. There we go. That's perfect.
You know, dear, I nearly skidded off the road in that darn snowstorm on the way home.
That's terrible, Tom. Did you know that in the 4 years Tim Pawlenty has been governor, winter has actually started earlier each year?
Honey, you're kidding.
No. And the summers have gotten hotter.
Oh, goodness. It sounds like Tim Pawlenty is bringing on the apocalypse.
Uh-huh.
I mean, what's next? Plagues of locusts?
That's not funny, Tom.
Uh-huh.
No. Tim Pawlenty voted 5 times for locusts while he was a state legislator.
No kidding.
No.
Well, I remember you acted like it was the end of the world 4 years ago when I voted for Tim Pawlenty. Gee, honey, I guess it actually was.
You should have listened. You never do. Just like a man.
Nicely done. Thank you. God, hearing that reminds me how in the early days of doing the live show, like that one, we were doing them once a month, and I would, like clockwork, get so sick just before we had to do the show, and I would just have to fight through it and totally collapse the next day. I apparently got better, but for a while, my body was much more scared than my brain, evidently, of putting those on. I'm going to play one more clip now that's sort of from that era, and no one specifically requested it, but I know that my former boss, Michael, if he were here, would probably request this clip because it was one of his favorites. We were talking about digital technology, and remember, this is very beginning of 2007, I think. And so we were talking about texting and MySpace, and we invited in, who else? A bunch of teenage girls to talk to us about it. And this is part of the section about texting.
I was once writing a paper, and I had to get used to actually typing Y-O-U instead of just typing U.
Yes!
And because...
Well, I never do that. I'm sorry. It's always gotten on my nerves, so I'm like, no, I'm going to be a good texter and write Y-O-U and F-O-R. I will not use a four.
Only if, like, you run out of, like, characters on your...
Yeah. You have, like, 130 or something, and then you have to... Sometimes I write four just because I don't want to use all those.
We sound so ridiculous. But, like, another thing that's bad is, like, when you're... when you're actually, like, talking out loud... Or, like, you hear someone go, oh, LOL, or, like, oh, JK. It's like, no, just say the word.
JK.
Just kidding.
J to the K.
OMG.
SH.
I know that one.
Oh, you know what my favorite is? R-O-F-L. Rolling on the floor laughing.
I think we've all learned something here tonight from these young ladies. Not your usual talking heads. That's In the Loop. And in that spirit of taking it to the people, somewhere in there we started holding these things called story slams. And this came to us from an outside producer. Her name is Melissa LaCase. And she thought that we might be the right guys to try and roll out her idea here in the Twin Cities. And thus began a series of eight, I think, when all was said and done, story slams. We set a topic and just invite storytellers to come out, step on stage and tell their stories, and we edit them down into a radio show. Now, when they heard about the end of In the Loop, two of our favorite slammers, Sarah Martin and Gabe Heller, did a very poignant thing. They took to the stage of a local cabaret in Minneapolis, it's called Ball's Cabaret at the Southern Theater, to talk about what the show meant to them. They sent us in the audio, and here's some of it.
So the first thing you'll notice is that these microphones aren't actually amplifying our voices.
Do not be concerned.
We're just recording.
Yeah.
I received a phone call earlier this week, I think, from Sandin, who's the producer of one of our favorite programs on Minnesota Public Radio. And he was calling to say that, unfortunately, that program In the Loop has been canceled.
And it's one of our favorite programs for many reasons, but one of the reasons is that we've both been on it.
Yes. doing what we're doing now, which is telling stories. That's also where we met.
But our story of us meeting and falling in love is sort of the story of four venues. Just to set the record straight, we're going to start at the very beginning, which is actually at the In the Loop Story Slam being held at the time at Bedlam Theater. And she saw me first, so I'll have her start.
I had heard on the radio, I'm listening to NPR, and I hear people telling stories at the time Brantley Bowl, and I'm like, oh, this is really cool. They're just like picking a topic and showing up and telling their stories. I can do that. I can totally do that. So I went to the next one to see what it was like. And everyone's telling stories and they're great, and then walks in this guy in this bright magenta paisley shirt and a massive beard. And he gets up and sings a song that he wrote about Mark Cerisi, his vengeance upon Mark Cerisi.
One of the many law firms that did not help me when I lost my job.
Yes.
But he happened to be running for office.
And this is crazy. This is a great venue. I love it. I went back the next time and brought a story to tell this time. I told a story about roommates who have tried to kill me. There have been four. And Gabe told a story about the cat that he had at the time, who had just given birth to kittens.
That was the price of it being a free cat, was that it was pregnant. So I then had kittens to get rid of, and I decided to get rid of them by telling a story about them on the radio and hoping someone would come and get them.
I love cats. So after the show, I was like, you've got cats. I need a cat. I have a very old, lazy, fat cat who needs a playmate.
More to the story, of course, but the rest is history. We're proud to have given birth to our very own In the Loop couple, Gabe and Sarah. Wonderful people, great storytellers, and they're getting married in July, I believe. Now, that song that Sarah mentioned when she first saw Gabe on stage, his Mike Cerisi song, I think she misspoke and said Mark, it's Mike Cerisi. That was, and there are many, but that was certainly one of our best Story Slam moments. It was completely unexpected. No one knew Gabe was going to break into song, and the Smarts, our band, was trying to figure out what he was doing and join in. And you just had this moment where awkwardness gave way to this moment when suddenly Gabe had this audience in the palm of his hand. Exactly what the Story Slams were all about.
The phone rang for a moment, then a secretary spoke. I asked for employment law, but it was all a joke. They represent employers, not employees, don't you see? And since there was little they could ever do for me, so I'm not voting for Cerisi. Not for Cerisi. Not for Cerisi. No, I'm not voting for Cerisi. Not in a million years. Now he took on big tobacco, and that's all well and good. I'm sure you'll all agree that they deserve to shed some blood. Now he got 10% of it, he surely could help me. Instead he runs for Congress, how self-serving can you be? So I'm not voting for Cerisi. Not for Cerisi. Not for Cerisi. No, I'm not voting for Cerisi. Not in a million.
Gabe Heller, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, we're on the subject of the Story Slams. Another great friend that we met that way is a writer and performer named Amy Salloway. And Amy is prone to strong displays of emotion, and she would concede that, I think. She's been lamenting the end of In the Loop on Facebook, and it makes us feel, you know, good and sad at the same time, but we're grateful for it. And she held it together long enough, though, to write and record this wonderful poem for us, which she left on our voicemail the other day. And I'm going to play it for you in its entirety. She wants you to know, just a quick setup, all the family info is completely true.
To Sandon and Jeff and In the Loop, where is my lunch? My grandma Gert was 90 and still living on her own. But when she set her wig on fire, Dad moved her to a home. She stole her roommate's Valium, wrote freedom on the wall. When she came to Mahjong naked, the staff gave Dad a call. My dad chatted at Gert's bedside. He'd flown in from out of town. Where's my lunch? She interrupted. So he went to track it down. When he learned her sandwich status and returned with beef on rye, he found my grandma'd left us for that deli in the sky. Ever since she passed away, let's see, 8 years ago, I've classified her exit as the perfect way to go. No blood or pain or illness beat dementia to the punch. And she summarized life's meaning with those last words, where's my lunch? Now you and I are facing an end I didn't choose. You wish I could be happy. That'd take a lot of booze. But I've got this Gert-inspired request as my tear ducts start to bunch. Let's not say goodbye, okay? Let's just say, where's my lunch? Where's my lunch? I'm gonna miss you. Where's my lunch? Man, we had fun. We made megabytes of memories, and I'll archive every one. I don't really think we're finished. I guess that's my hopeful hunch. But that doesn't make it easy to ask you, where's my lunch? I'm told I'm like my grandma. I've got her biting wit. And I act the loudmouth know-it-all. But of course, I'm full of shh. Anyway, so I can't help but wonder, as you turn to walk away, if I'd served a better sandwich, would you make the choice to stay? Where's my lunch? I'll always love you. Where's my lunch? I guarantee You'll be right here inside my chest. I'm pointing like E.T. And if you get you've made the wrong choice because your heart is going crunch, well, you won't have said goodbye. You'll just have wondered, where is my lunch? And you can call and we'll hang out because it's just lunch. Thanks, you guys.
Aw, thank you, Amy. Well, let's take another call here. See where we go next.
Hi, In the Loop. This is Tracy in Chicago. I am very sad that this is going to be the end of In the Loop. There are so many reasons why I really enjoyed the show. I must say that your shows from the fall of 2007 really hold a special place in my heart because the exploration of the various topics that you hit upon that fall provided much, much, much needed relief from grad school for me. So you guys sort of helped get me through grad school, which I really appreciate. Overall, my absolute top in-the-loop moment has to be during that time, during that fall, Jeff and the Smarts singing Sexual Healing, or was it Charitable Giving, rather. That is by far my favorite In the Loop moment.
Yeah, oh, baby. I'm hot to make a contribution. Find a solution. And baby, I can't hold back much longer. It's getting stronger and stronger. An important part of living is charitable giving. Charitable giving, yeah. Makes me feel so fine. Hey, helps relieve my mind. Charitable giving, baby, it's good for me. Charitable giving is something that's good for me. Whenever someone comes knocking, or I spot a cause that needs a little help, you see, there is something I can do. I can whip out my credit card and I can give some money, baby. I don't need no t-shirt or mug. No, I don't even need no, don't need no thank you hug. If you're having a little trouble just believing, well, open up yourself and try some charitable giving. Yeah. Let's give some tonight. Got to give it right.
That's our house band, The Smarts, behind me, making me sound awfully sexy about a non-sexy topic. Okay, thanks to Tracy in Chicago, we're going to move on to the music for a little bit. You know, music was not a staple of the show at the beginning. It didn't have any part in it, as a matter of fact. It wasn't until The Smarts came on board and demonstrated that you could write good songs about the news or whatever our topic was that I started doing it too a little bit later. And at a certain point, like that one you just heard, we were doing it every week, three songs a week, as a matter of fact, two from me usually and one from the guys, not to mention whatever little musical baubles we'd throw in the show elsewhere. It was a lot of fun and a lot of work, but it created an element that really stuck with people. And so I stuck with it myself, even after we went back into the studio and the live shows ceased. Every week we did a show, more or less, I think, I have done a song associated with the news that week. So when a lot of you wrote in about your favorite moments, especially from recent months, makes me personally feel very good that many of you mentioned the songs. And I can't play them in their entirety, but we'll do a little sort of a medley thing here, just of some ones that people specifically said they wanted to hear again. So first up, Mike Ryback, I think he posted on Facebook, and Ralph Lee via Twitter both said they wanted a reprise of that classic, Bernanke and the Fed.
Hey kids, put your hands together. Let's hear it for the guy who kinda sorta made things better. Guess we might as well just have him stick around. Hey, at the very least, he didn't run us into the ground. Set Geithner and Summers complete the set. Ooh, you can't take him out. Bernanke and the Fed. Oh, and his beard is so wonderful. That Benny, he's really keen. Well, he's slow to speak, but he didn't freak. Now the interest rate's the lowest we've seen. Yo, Bernanke and the Fed.
Now, a listener named Anthony Kinsella requested this next one, and I'm glad that he did, because this happens to be our biggest YouTube hit to date, by quite a margin. And I think it was just a magical combination of the right timing, the right subject matter, and, of course, who was in the video. This is my little green friend and me doing our tribute to the people struggling for democracy in Iran.
It's not easy being green. Spend each day on the run from the besiege. This hasn't panned out like the others, orange or yellow or rose. Why can't this one turn out like that? It's not easy being green. Try to blend in with the others in the mob. Plain clothes police will run you over, drag you off to Evan prison, or maybe just beat you in the street with electric batons. But green's the color of change.
Now, anybody who's listened to the show much knows that I have a weakness for doing impressions. Presidents, of course, including the current one. And in this case, this was one of those that I didn't even know I had in me until I got the idea. And then just started goofing around to see if I could actually pull it off. Anyhow, this next one is pretty recent. This is from Sia McCullough, the request anyway, who wanted the song I did the week Apple announced the iPad.
When I get to hold you, I begin to understand what it's like to hold a netbook in one hand.
It's a little awkward.
Can't stop.
Can't stop.
I need.
I don't
know why.
Oh God.
It's white.
It starts.
With I.
Yeah.
Whatever you put out, I'll buy it. Anything you tout, I'll try it. Money's running out, I'll dye it. Steve, I'll buy it.
And just for the record, I am not a fanboy, but I play one on the radio. And this next one, I was really glad to see roll in. I'm double dipping a little bit here because this is from Amy Salloway, who had the poem earlier, but this is one of my personal favorites. And it was an idea that was suggested by a listener, and then I executed it, which is always a great way for these things to happen. We've had plenty of fun along the way, gentle fun when appropriate, with the swine flu. And this song was from very early on. Remember where swine flu came from? Right. And there was a certain sort of buzz in the air. And I'm also particularly proud of this one because at the time it felt like the riskiest piece of satire or social commentary that I had ever done.
Woke up this morning, turned on the news, heard something about Mexico and how they're sending us some kind of pig-based disease. Say this might be the big one. The deadly pandemic that wipes us all out, killing us all where we stand. Or maybe it's just passing through. Opened the paper and all I saw were pictures of Mexican people in masks, just like some kind of aliens planning their war. Will they call it swine flu? Must be something about sleeping with pigs, I guess. Kind of thing I'd never do. And yet, I might get it from you. Don't cough on me, Alejandro. The truth is, I never liked you. Don't cross the border, you make me nervous. Don't touch my pencil, you might have pig flu.
One more request to deal with here. This one's from Sophia Walsh in St. Cloud, and I'm so glad she remembered it because it's exactly what we need on this show today. Do you remember this webcam that was set up for a while watching a crate full of Shiba Inu puppies. What was all the rage in the particular week when I conceived of this song, and it just didn't make sense for me to sing it. I mean, I performed the music, but I turned to my friend Bridget Murphy, who works down in marketing and has a lovely voice, perfect for this concept, to pull it off.
What takes Shiba Inus, sticks them in a box, rolling all around and playing tug of war with socks. The puppy cam can.
The puppy cam can.
The puppy cam can, because hey, all you do is click and there are puppies on your screen. What shows up in your email, forwarded to you, distracts you at the office from the work that you should do. The puppy cam can.
The puppy cam can.
The puppy cam can, and when your boss is not around, you can watch it all day. Puppies flop around, wrestling on the ground, delighting everyone who sees them. Don't you wish that you could squeeze them? You can click and pause and freeze them. They're just so cute. What can lift your spirits? Put a smile on your face. Forget about the misery that is the human race. The puppy cam can.
The puppy cam can.
The puppy cam can, because hey, all you do is click and there are puppies on your screen. Yawning puppies on your screen. Yipping puppies on your screen. Fuzzy puppies on your screen.
Hey, Sandin and Jeff, here is a final poem. Close the loop in. With apologies to John Hyatt, but I hate to see MPR smashing a perfectly good guitar with an audience not from the in crowd, but who could see it from where they were standing. An ITL team who knew that the news is not headlines or hurry, controversy or celebrity, but thoughtful effort or effortless thought. I could never tell which one it was. For listeners caught between their parents' public radio and the blissful, not quite ignorance of their peers. We'll miss learning from an interview with an unknown expert, like a cool book you discover misshelved at the library. Still, Jeff can still sing and ask the right questions. And Sandin can still tell the difference between an odd angle on the news and the just right oblique one. They are done, but well done it was. See you guys in another e-world. That's it.
Craig Kenworthy calling in, as always, from Bozeman, Montana. Craig's poems have punctuated our show many times over the past couple of years. Craig, thank you so much for all of your work. We're very grateful to have known you. Craig takes us definitively into part two of the program. The grand tour is more or less over, and we're going to, believe it or not, generate some new content before we get the hell out of here. As many of you know, if you've listened to the show for any length of time, we have kind of a tradition of calling difficult, maybe very expensive places. Zimbabwe a bunch of times, Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Vanuatu, little tiny island back in the day. And for our last show, we kind of thought, okay, what is the most ridiculous place that we could call, since it's a, kind of our last shot at it, right? And so Sandin went through quite a bureaucratic journey through NASA before learning that there's a two-month waiting list for the space station. And so, hello, canceled show. It's not really a good option for us. But we had also gone looking for signs of life at the South Pole, and that was not quite so difficult. And as a matter of fact, we found Genevieve Ellison, who blogs at icewishes.wordpress.com, and she's been working in Antarctica since 2004. Winter is setting in at the South Pole, and we've managed to get a little satellite window here to chat with her. Genevieve, thanks very much for taking some time for us.
Hi there, Jeff.
A lot of bloggers at the South Pole, we noticed.
I think we've got a higher per capita number of bloggers here than there is in the rest of the world.
It certainly looks that way. And I would imagine that to some extent, it's this need for you to communicate, right? Because the winter sounds like, it sounds unimaginable to me, at least the way that you write about it.
It is unimaginable when you haven't done it. It's difficult for your first winter because you don't know what you expect necessarily. But this winter is my second winter, and everything is a lot easier this year.
Well, talk to me more about the cold, because you write very eloquently in trying to describe to people just what it's like.
It's a very intimate experience, because no matter how well you dress in all of our extreme cold weather gear, if we're going outside at negative 70 or negative 80 or something like that, it shortens the amount of time that our own bodies heat defenses can protect us before we start running through the calories that we, say, ate for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And we run through calories like nobody's business here. I don't know. It's so hard to explain that kind of cold. I mean, you just...
And you can never really leave it behind, it sounds like.
You know, I can't feel my thumb. Okay, that means I've been outside for 35 minutes. So I draw my thumb back in from where it's sticking out of my mitten, and I hang onto my, you know, hand warmer, or else I swing my arm around really quickly to get the feeling back in my thumb, and then I'm like, okay, I'm good. I'm back. I'll continue working with whatever I need to work with.
And we're talking about 60 below, 70 below Fahrenheit during the day, right?
It's 70 below right now.
Wow. And you're a wastie is the term for it.
I take care of all of the solid waste and the hazardous waste that is generated by the station. We are required to remove all the waste that we produce in order to try and maintain Antarctica as a pristine environment for science purposes.
So you're the wastie. Everybody down there refers to themselves as a poly.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. And then some other terminology I was trying to pick up, the beakers. Those are the science-type people?
Yeah, the beakers are the science people. I think that's rather an endearing term, actually, because it does come from The Muppet Show with Beaker, the scientist. And I really like that term to refer to the science community down here.
Well, now you've warned me, let's see, don't ask you about the drunken debauchery because you'll get in trouble and because we want the taxpayers to know that their money's well spent. So let me just reinforce that you all work insanely hard. And of course, you have some fun in your off time, rare as it is.
Absolutely. During the winter here, we have various traditions. Coming up next weekend, we are going to have our annual sunset dinner. The sun is actually setting on the 23rd of March here, or, well, it'll be setting anywhere between the 20th and the 26th. It'll just keep on setting. And that's a dress-up affair where we have tablecloth, you know, an amazingly detailed gourmet meal that's cooked for us by the cooks, and it's a place for the community to gather. It's sort of the first official gathering point of the winter.
Now, that doesn't sound like pointless drunken debauchery to me. That sounds very nice. But there are only...
It is, actually. It's magnificent.
There are only 47 people there, and no one can come or go for months. Certainly, people would have to wonder about just the mental state of individuals and a group of people who go through something like that. What would you say, you know, happens to your mind during that period that you're heading into now?
Sometimes I imagine that my mind has ice crystals in it and things are just moving a little bit slower than it should. You ask someone for the salt and you're looking at it and you're pointing at it and you're like, right there, that thing right there. You lose words sometimes, you lose people's names, you get a little bit of a mental fatigue sometimes.
I wrote down something from your blog. I think you wrote, "Until I got to Antarctica, I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up." You're 45, right? Something like that?
Yes.
Do you know now what you want to be when you grow up?
I think I would refer to what I've got right now is lifer syndrome. There are people who come down here and do just one season. They've managed to bag their seventh continent, or they've had their adventure, and they go back to doing other things and having other adventures. And then there are some of us who just keep on coming back and coming back and coming back. There's a saying that the first year you come down here for the adventure, the second year you come down here for the money, the third year you come down because you don't fit anywhere else.
Well, I know you've got a long winter ahead of you, and if you get bored, you know, we've got 5 years of back episodes of our show to keep you busy.
That's so kind. Thank you. I'll think about downloading some of them.
Do some catching up. But it's been really interesting to talk with you, and thank you for making some time for us here.
Thank you very much for being interested in the South Pole. It's a beautiful place.
Genevieve Ellison writes her blog, icewishes.wordpress.com, and she's been working in Antarctica and various places since 2004. And looking at the rundown here, I kind of have to take back what I said about the tour being over. It's not quite over. We're going to go back in time here once again, because along with calling ridiculous places like Antarctica and Zimbabwe, whatever, there's one other recent tradition that we wanted to look back on. Along with the bigger songs for the show, you know, at some point since we went podcast only about a year ago, I developed a propensity for populating the episodes with these little things that I call bugs. And they're short little bits of music, sometimes really short, that either make a quick little commentary on something or they serve as kind of a signpost for a regular segment. It's a very solitary thing, making the bugs. A lot of times I'll do them first thing in the morning before I put the show together, or even while I'm putting the show together, and I generally have to make them pretty fast without a lot of instrumentation. And they're so scattered around the episodes, and most of them quickly recede into the mists of time, that I just thought it'd sound cool maybe to collect a whole bunch of them in one place here for our last show. So here, if you'll forgive me, is a little bug retrospective on all kinds of topics.
Well, we are going to the healthcare town hall.
Yes, sir.
Talking about policy and democracy and... Hey Joe, where'd you go? Hey Biden, where are you hiding? 1 minute he's there, feel a burst of hot air, and then, hey, where's Joe? It's the summer of death. Turkey alternatives.
What do you know?
What do you know?
Come on the show.
Come on the show. It's an In the Loop News Niche Spectacular. The Weekend Geek, my Facebook friends, my friends.
Scream it.
You gotta get them vaccinated.
One beef like patty, squirt of mayo cheese, whiz, no pickle on a slice of white bread.
Yo, Mickey D's, what's up?
Da 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 da, we're cutting back. Jay Leno is not funny. Bringing your trash, you might give you some cash. Talking about cash for clunkers. It's not really that good for the environment. Wah-wah Saturn, it's been fun while it lasted
24 years.
And lots of other brands just can't compare.
You got plastic doors.
You're a really decent guy. You make cars we want to buy. But sometimes you know life just isn't fair. Don't forget to wash your hands. Bread Farr's gonna be a Viking.
No, he's not.
Yes, he is. God, I hope I get it. I hope I get it. I need a dose of that vaccine.
I need a dose of that vaccine.
God, I hope I get it. I hope I get it. In my armor, in my nose.
Stick it in my armor, in my...
Look at all the people. At all the people, they're lining up for that vaccine.
In their armor, in their nose,
but there isn't any.
I really need the shot. Please God, I need the shot. I've got to get this shot.
Okay, so that last one, if you didn't pick it up from the context or remember hearing it, that was in the middle of the swine flu epidemic, and everybody wanted to get a shot, of course. And the voice at the end of that, that beautiful soaring soprano, is Anna Wegel, who's been showing up in our credits a lot in the last 6 months, and she's been doing a ton for the show. And she was just getting into the groove. You were just getting into the groove, Anna. I'm sorry that we have to pull the plug on it.
No, I mean, you guys have both given me so much over, I don't know, the year and a half that I've maybe been working with you. You know, before working with you guys, I had never produced or audio edited or booked a guest or pitched an idea. And I really feel like even though we're done, I the experience will live on.
We believed in you.
Yeah.
And you had so much enthusiasm for what we were doing even before we started working with you. And that was very energizing. So I'm glad that we're able to at least have this short time together. And as we were doing our last show here, I thought, why don't I ask you if there's anything in particular, aside from that clip we just played, which is great, if there's anything else that you've been involved with here, either, you know, the editing or producing or any of the, you know, newsy kind of things that you've done for us that you think we should play a clip of in this last show.
Yeah, I thought about this, and of all of the things that I've ever helped you with, there's one that is the most traumatizing, and that
That's
was
good. Let's do that.
The Podcasting for Old People song, surely
yes.
Because of the amount of takes it took for me to actually get an old woman's voice right and have it not sound like the pedophile neighbor from Family Guy.
Yeah, but you know what? In the end, that worked. It was perfect. Give us a little of your pedophile guy from Family Guy.
Something like, hey, Chris, you want a popsicle?
Excellent. Podcasting for old people. You know, this is one of my favorites, too. So we'll play some of it for people. And it's especially good for this show because it came up in that weird period when we were shifting from being a radio show to, not entirely voluntarily, becoming a podcast. And we had a lot of people in our audience who, let's say, were not millennials and were wondering about how to do it. And we thought we'd have this segment with a couple of our folks from the Senior Citizen Center coming in to help us out.
I used to hear the show when I would drive to my bingo game on Friday night. I'd get so wrapped up in that, in the loop, it made me almost run a yellow light.
What?
Goodness!
Well, one time...
They thought because we're old we wouldn't get it.
Or that we'd hear it once and then forget it.
Just because it's off the air, am I not supposed to care?
Now I need to learn to podcast,
even though it makes me scared. Well, it shouldn't. That's why we're here. So the first thing that you need is some kind of podcast box, like an iPod.
Oh my goodness.
Or another deal like that.
Can I get one at the grocery store?
I think maybe, yeah, but you might have to go to like a Radio Shack or a Walgreens.
What?
And you go to your computer, you click on the thing.
Computer? What?
Yes, you need a computer. You can't podcast.
Can I use my grandson's computer?
That should be fine. How is your grandson? Is he good?
He's a delinquent.
So you put your computer on the Interloop podcast page.
And you're on the Google net where nobody knows your age.
Uh-huh. From there it says you need to get the address of the feed and you copy that into your third-party RSS podcatcher software.
What?
I know. What the hell does that mean? I'm just reading off the thing.
The one time I clicked a computer, my screen filled with pornography.
Guess you need some kind of separate program or something that knows where to look for new episodes.
I think I just had an episode.
What's the point of this again?
So you can listen to the show wherever you want, whenever you want.
Can I listen to it in my kitchen by turning on the radio?
No.
Why does setting up something to be convenient have to be so hard?
Okay, just hang in there. Now, if you have the iTunes, you might be better off. You just say In the Loop to it, and it turns up in there somewhere. When you find the right one, click the button to subscribe.
And then you just gotta get it on your iPod box.
That can be kind of tricky, because iPods can be stupid.
Your grandson can help you when there isn't any shame.
Get the file thing on the box, put the box in your car, and,
What?
Okay, now you've got the file on the box in your car.
It don't make any noise.
That's because you need some cord or something, or a radio transmitter thing that you set on a particular frequency or some damn thing.
But don't put in your headphones, because they'll take away your license.
Well, that's pretty much it.
So you guys you're able to podcast the show now.
We hope you can use this to teach people.
Thank you.
Anytime.
It's our pleasure.
I just had to let that play out. It was just so right. Laughter in the face of difficult circumstances. And anyway, where else can you find Sandin and Anna and me all together in the same segment having so much fun? Not very many places, I don't think. So it's a nice little moment in that regard. We did lose a lot of listeners when we went digital, and I received lamentations from many people by email and Pony Express who were not able to keep up with the show, even though they'd enjoyed it on the radio. But we did enter into a very exciting chance to reach a whole new level of interaction with our audience over this past year, and I'm very grateful for that. That gets us nicely to this next interview we've got coming. For those of you who've been listening for very long, I almost don't need to introduce this guy that I'm about to talk to. He's practically, I'd say, like an honorary cast member of the show, in a way, but one that you hardly ever hear from, except when I occasionally play this little video that he made that I remixed into our theme song.
Hello. Hello. It's quiet here. Please.
It's quiet here.
That's right. For our final episode, we're going to talk with the famous... or infamous Mark in Paris. Mark Neymark is his full name. And Mark, how are you on this fine French day?
I'm fine, thank you.
You know, I feel like I know you because of Facebook and all the other ways that we interact, but it's a pleasure to hear your voice.
And it's a pleasure to hear your voice live. I guess. Although I've heard that right. Live before on the video streaming of some interviews you've done, so I have the advantage on you.
Well, you're a pretty devoted listener, so you've heard my voice more than enough to last you a lifetime, I'm sure. Let me just regale people with your distinctions here. You had this first user submit a video on our Facebook page. You have had probably more than anybody thoughtful questions you've submitted during these live video streamed interviews we've been doing, and those have been super helpful. And you're definitely up there, I'd say, for the volume of comments and really good comments that you've had on our Facebook page. And I would say that you're among just like a handful of people, I could probably name them all, who really set the standard for how people have helped really power this show. So I don't know if you feel very special, but you are special. So thank you, Mark.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure.
Here's something that I think nobody else would probably know, but you and I know, that you also probably hold the record, and it's a modest record, but the record for the most angry emails submitted by a single person.
Well, yeah, and, bygones. No, but it's true. I think I was trying to think back of how I started listening, and when I think back, I think I started listening faithfully because I sort of hated you. And I had this, it was one of those things you love to hate. So I became a faithful listener, trying to see how many things you would say that would make me angry. And gradually I grew to like what you were saying. So
well, we started out on a rough foot. That's true. And I asked Anna to just go dig through some of those early emails because I had lost track of them, but I wanted to revisit them. And here's some of the greatest hits. This was when we were first rolling out. You know, we had sort of rebounded from our live world, and we were rolling out this kind of weekly concept, and we rolled it out to the podcast for people to see what they thought. And you wrote in, "Arg, I hate the pilot, and it's only half over." It's somewhere else in that note. You said Jeff should do more than just hold a microphone up for his guests. And then this one that's my favorite, perhaps, and I keep it with me whenever I'm doing an interview. Goodness, Jeff. Once again, you let your interviewees get away with murder. Please make an effort once in a while to do more than listen. A little stroll down memory lane. Yeah, you had some issues with the way that I did interviews. You were always very specific, I should say.
The only one that I can go back and remember, because I have a bad memory, but it was a story about, I think, some veterans from Iraq, I think, who were living in a house together somewhere in Minnesota, I guess. And one of them said something which really infuriated me. And so I was angry with you for letting him get away with that and not contradicting him. And I think that was perhaps unfair because, you know, you're not Mike Wallace doing gotcha interviews. You're letting people talk. And that's a quality, and you know, which I've come to appreciate. I don't think everybody needs to be attacked or contradicted or, you know, there's a place for that. But sometimes it's good just to hear what people have to say. And I think you've done a good job with that in taking advantage of your, you know, public insight network, is that what it's called? To get people who have something to say and let them say it.
I've always gotten a kick out of saying it, and I've said it plenty of times. Mark in Paris, Mark in Paris, Mark in Paris. Because, hey, we got a guy in Paris. And so I get to finally ask, what is Mark doing in Paris?
Well, Mark actually has to work sometimes to make some money. So I teach English and businesses by the telephone mostly. I do translations. I do some copywriting.
But how did you wind up there? Because I'm judging from your voice, you're an American, or at least American born, right?
Yes, I'm an American, yeah. Well, I studied French literature in the U.S. and came to Paris to do research for my dissertation. Was warned that they didn't want to let me go because they thought I wouldn't come back, and they were right. Soon enough, you know, it's been over 20 years, so I guess I'm Parisian now, so.
Now, your life's work, and it has been for a little while now, I gather, is the 2010 Gay Games, which are coming up, in July in Cologne, Germany?
Yeah, opening ceremony is the 31st of July. They run for 1 week to the 7th of August. I'm on the board of directors of the Federation of Gay Games, which is sort of like the IOC. It's the largest sporting events in the world, open to everyone. There are no selections, no qualifications. It's open to men, women of all ages, gay, straight, whatever.
Wait, do you have to qualify on an athletic basis to compete?
No, it's the motto of the Gay Games is participation, inclusion, and personal best. They were founded in 1982 by a former Olympic athlete, Tom Waddell. He sort of had an idea of something different than the dominant model of elite sport.
But I don't have to prove that I've ever, pole vaulted or platform dived or whatever before I show up to do it?
No, you don't have to prove That's anything. You don't have to, you just register. And our philosophy is sport for all. And that's why we make everything as open as possible.
Well, Mark, as often is the case when we talk with people in other parts of the world, it's getting late where you are. Are you heading out into that Parisian evening and going to sort of do what all of us imagine one can do in the evening in Paris?
Grocery shopping?
Yeah. That's what in my mind's eye, that's what I picked.
Yeah, that's it. The romantic grocery shopping. The supermarket that I'm going to is called Casino, so I guess I can say I'm going to the casino.
No glass of wine by the Seine or something wonderful like that?
I do have a pretty beautiful view of Paris from my neighborhood. I live in Belleville, which is in eastern Paris, and we have an amazing sunset view looking west to the center of Paris. So that's a little privilege from living in this part of town.
Well, I'm glad that along the way we've turned you from a hater to a lover. We've been very glad to have you, and it's been great to talk with you, Mark. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you, and good luck to you. That's Mark Neymark talking with me from his apartment in Paris. And you know, Mark is a shining example of a phenomenon that we experienced over and over and over again over the past year, which are people willing to get into the community, to interact with us, to share their experiences, their stories, their feedback, their ideas for music, all kinds of things. It's been a remarkable ride, and I've learned a tremendous amount about just how powerful it can be to have a community like that working with you. So thank you, not just to Mark, but to everybody else who helped us pioneer this way of building a radio show. And before we get into the final part of the program here, I just want to acknowledge a few more people who called in to wish us well since we announced our demise.
Hello, In the Loop. It's Al Nowoski from St. Paul.
Hi, this is Derek from Nashville, New Hampshire.
This is Veronica Jacobson from Ridgefield, Minnesota.
This is John Irvin from Minneapolis.
I just wanted to say a quick thank you.
Thanks a lot, guys.
I wanted to let you guys know what your show has meant to me over the last few years.
I'm going to be missing your show quite a bit.
And I just wanted to say I'm sorry to see you go.
Boo.
I found your show during a very up and down part of my life, and I would save it up for those days of my week where I thought, oh my goodness, I cannot get through this day.
You guys were way more entertaining than the film In the Loop of the same name. God, that was a bad movie.
But more than that, I was really counting on you guys plugging my book about veganism when it comes out. Now when my book comes out in, hold on, let me check my calendar here, hold on. 6 to 7 years from now, who am I going to turn to when I want to get the word out?
But in any event, I hope you guys keep doing what you're doing.
And I wish all of you the best of luck in the future.
Anyway, love you guys.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, guys. And everybody who's called in, emailed us, Twittered about it, posted on Facebook, blogged about it. We're so grateful to know that we meant something to you. Now, Sandin edited those together, did a damn fine job of it, and he's going to be in here in a minute. But first, I just need to say thank you to a few more people, and I promise I'm going to move quickly. But with all of our half disappearances in the past, I was never able to really properly thank a whole bunch of people who deserved it. And I didn't want to just jam it at the end of the show, so I'm doing it now. Just listen to this incredible list to get some sense of all the people who have been a part of this over 5 years. I can start with the actors, people like Susan Fuller, Gary Grooms, Robin Johnson, Jackie Fuller, who still sits in the cube next to me, and our dozens and dozens of commentators and storytellers, all these people who gave their talents for nothing, except maybe a parking space, if that, because we had no money to pay contributors. To the band, the Smarts, Joe Weissman, Jimmy Kennedy, Morse Engel, these guys who delivered way, way more than any musicians could be expected to, given what we were able to pay them, and who stuck with me, they stuck with the show through every turn. They're still with me, and they're good friends of mine. Jeremy Pavlik, who became our photographer for almost every live event we did, wonderful photographs. We never had the money to pay him. Producers like Nikki Tundell and Julie Seipel, who started the show along with me way back when. Larissa Anderson, who joined us for the weekly season. Jim Gates, Mark Brule, Leith Bishop, all of whom made big changes in their lives to come on board and help run things during that weekly season in 07 and make it such an incredible success. Molly Bloom in Public Insight Journalism, who's done incredible work for us over the years. Someone like Sam Keenan, who engineered some of our early shows and was the first guy to take on that odd task of being our house band. Alan Freckman, it's hard to say enough, our stage manager for all the live shows and Story Slams, a great friend, a tireless supporter of what we're doing. Melissa LaCase, who brought us the Story Slam idea and then produced almost all of them. And I have to thank the engineers at NPR who rolled with all of our ridiculous requests to record a decent show in an offbeat Minneapolis theater or set up the stage to accommodate a full band, storytellers, interview guests, talking audience members, and me walking all over the place. And all the bosses who believed in it, who understood it, and who in various ways, to whatever extent they could, supported the show, who worked with me to find ways to keep it alive, despite knowing that their own higher-ups might not be crazy about it. Especially Kate Smith, who edited us and supported us through and then beyond even our final iteration on the radio, and Michael Scholar, who fought very hard for us and made the crucial step, really, of carving out a place for us in his department so this could become our jobs. And whenever I say us, or we, of course, I mean Sandin and me. The show really belongs to the two of us. Hey, Sandin, welcome back.
Hey, Jeff.
How you been feeling?
Oh, a little sad panda-ish at the moment.
Can you explain to me what that means?
Oh, it's just a phrase that the kids use to describe feeling a little blue.
Oh, you kids who are 5 years younger than I am. And yet such a gap, such a gulf. But yet you have brought along to bring us toward the close of the show today some wisdom and some knowledge that you're going to lay on us.
Yeah,
based on your experience within the loop.
When you found me, I was even more of a kid than I am today. I was fresh out of college. It was my very first internship at here at Minnesota Public Radio. And you said, hey, well, if you're willing to work, I've got a show you can work on. And 5 years later, here
Ain't
I am.
Nobody else wanting to work with us, so...
5 years later, I'm a
Help
producer,
yourself.
And it's been really great. But, you know, I couldn't have done all this without learning a ton of stuff along the way. Some of it's just sort of like basic stuff, like something I wish I'd known earlier. If you want to book an interview with someone on the International Space Station, give yourself a little more than a week's window to do that.
If we'd known that just 2 months earlier.
Yeah, that would have been pretty sweet.
But the South Pole was pretty awesome, and you booked that.
That was cool.
And she was terrific, so thank you.
Totally. And just practical lines, you know, we've dealt with a lot of phone lines, and... I've basically mapped out what I think is the correct scale of phone line superiority for far-off places. South Korea has better phone lines than Georgia, which has better phone lines than Vanuatu, which is better than Kenya, which is better than Pakistan, which is better than post-earthquake Chile, though I'm not sure if pre-earthquake Chile or post-post-earthquake Chile would be in there. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that is better than Iraq, all of which are better than Zimbabwe, which probably has the worst phone lines in the world.
And when you were away this week, because you've been in Austin at South by Southwest Interactive
yep.
for a while,
yep.
and I was here trying to do some of this on my own, and I was trying to call France, and I don't know why. It took me 4 or 5 tries to dial that number right, and I'm like, if Sandin were here, he knows how to dial another country. It's so automatic for you.
It's a skill I picked up, along with a lot of other useless knowledge I picked up along the way. Like, for instance, if you want to buy a fake passport,
mm-hmm.
go to the Kmart on Lake Street.
Yep, very useful for me.
Video footage of rioters and cops clashing is called protest porn.
Yeah, baby.
If you're going to go hitchhiking in Iraq, don't skimp on the tour guide. It's easy to wind up in Iran.
Mm.
And lastly, poop. Pee, fat, and bunnies can all be used as disturbing sources of biofuels.
Not to mention that 2 out of those 4 words can, in fact, be said on public radio.
Yeah.
Not with a straight face, but they can be said.
And, you know, there's some deeper lessons I've learned, too. One of the big ones I've realized is that, you know, if you want to make sort of big things happen, you got to talk big. You know, I've noticed when I'm on the phone with some big shot, you know, author or some scientist or whatever, if I pretend like I'm some high-flying producer, they're 10 times more likely to take me seriously, even if it's just, you know, little old me sitting at my desk. So, you know, talk big, and if you're trying to pitch someone on being on your show, it's a lot better to say that you work for a digital entertainment adventure that uses new platforms to engage people all over the world, rather than saying, I work for a podcast.
And when they say, when's this going to be on? You learn creative ways to describe.
You always say, well, it's going to be on all across the world, via the internet.
For anybody, anytime.
Right. They get a little more excited when it sounds like, you know, people all across the world could be listening, even if it's, you know, really just a handful. But
yep.
Another thing I learned, totally crucial, and you can apply this in your own life. If you want to understand anything complicated, play dumb. Just pretend like you don't know what people are talking about. Don't try to show off your intelligence. Just keep asking questions over and over again. And
I don't follow. What are you talking about?
Good job, Jeff.
Thank you.
If you do this, you'll be surprised at how clearly someone can give you an explanation of something really complicated when they think they're dealing with basically the mental equivalent of Cheese Whiz.
Ah, so this is your persona of the last couple of years as a producer for us, a complete moron who happens to work for an all-powerful media entity.
Hey, it's not that unheard of.
Mm-hmm. Got the job done.
The last lesson, and this one I think is really the keystone in the loop, is that I found over my 5 years working here that everybody is interesting. There's not a person I've gotten on the phone who hasn't in some way surprised me with their passion or some great story they have or, you know, a joke or an anecdote. And It's just like we couldn't have built this show without that being true. You know, we've been able to talk to people from like, you know, a vegan atheist stay-at-home dad to a banker who was wrestling with, you know, moral dilemmas after the housing crisis set in. You know?
Everybody has pivotal moments in their lives.
Right.
If you can tap into that.
Or like your Facebook friends. I mean, you just randomly picked people and we had what, a doula?
A gay professional wrestler. Well, it wasn't random, but
still.
Yeah, once you start asking some questions, you know, a girl who just sort of seemed interesting on the surface and it turned out she's a Trekkie with a very deep personal story to tell. You know, you just never know what's there. It's a great lesson.
Yeah, so just keep that in mind. You know, next time you're sitting next to someone on the bus or you're standing on a corner or
hanging out on chat roulette,
whatever it is, just start asking questions. If you're bored, there's always someone there who's got a story to tell you, and all you got to do is ask them about it. And if you do that, you'll carry the spirit of In the Loop forward on into the future.
Well, you and I and all of those people have created something pretty cool here over the past bunch of years.
Indeed, yeah.
And so I hope you're feeling good about it.
I do, Jeff.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
And thank you. Sandin Totten, of course, our producer. And before we wrap up, couldn't really be a show unless I give you some new music of some sort, right? Certainly wouldn't be a show for me. And so I've been wrestling with what to do, whether to do some big medley of goodbye songs or something like that. In the end, decided to go with something simple, original, lasting, I hope, and pretty brief. I wanted to build it around a phrase that Sandin and I have heard plenty of, I think, as we've gone through the last couple of weeks. And it's just one of those things that you hear in this situation that, you know, people mean it very well, and you have to decide, are you going to take it in a patronizing way, or are you going to embrace it? And it's tough deciding which one. In the end, decided to embrace it. And wrote this song about it. So I'm Jeff Horwich. This song will be the last thing that you'll hear, probably, from In the Loop. And here it is. When life's got you feeling downhearted and the world's inexplicably mean, something you vested your heart in did not go your way, you can't say you're back where you started when you've been somewhere great in between. Just remember this comforting phrase to get through the day. It's been a good run, yeah, a fine one, and you've had fun, but now you're all done. You did what you could, and it sure felt good. Just because you've earned the right to wallow doesn't mean you should. You had a good stint, a long and hard sprint, and they canned it, but hey, that's enter. Entertainment. Well, you gave it your best try. Long live this thing that's about to die. Well, it's sad when good things end, but you'll show them someday, my friend. It's been a good run. Pick yourself up, son. You know, as runs go, yeah, this was a great one. And the man won, but you got the job done. Something new has begun. You had a good run.